This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Or if they haven't voted in a certain amount of time, or if the signature on the voter registration card doesn't match the ID. Now, these few kind of changes are being challenged in the court. I will make that statement. But most of the time, in Republican-led states, they know that voter registration, since 2020, really, has gone up. So they're trying to make it harder for you to register to vote.
Style crew, we are back for another episode of our election series. We are here with a very, very special guest, Gary Williams II. This episode is dedicated to voter registration, voting rights, as well as voter suppression. I cannot wait to dive into this topic because it is so important as election day is right around the corner, less than a month away. And so I want all of the listeners to have the wisdom and the knowledge that's necessary before we arrive at November 5th. Or if you are an early voter, have knowledge as well as to consider if your state it requires or allows same day registration, all these things. So I'm going to jump right in by reading the bio of our guest. Since graduating from the Southern Law Center in 2018, Gary has built a reputation as a fact-driven, thorough, and confident litigator. Gary began his legal career with the Department of Justice as an assistant attorney general in areas of general liabilities. In his role at the DOJ, Gary used his moot court experience from law school, constantly winning hearings and securing dismissals of lawsuits as a young litigator. Gary went on to move into the private sector, where he was named one of the National Black Lawyers Top 40 Under 40 and selected for the Louisiana Bar Association Leadership Class of 2024 to 2025. Gary actively participates in pro bono work for underprivileged, underserved communities that cannot afford legal representation. He is now a federal prosecutor, mentor, part-time Marvel addict, and avid traveler with his wife, Ivy. So, Gary, welcome to the podcast. We are extremely excited to have you here. And with your bio alone, I just know that the listeners are going to gain so much from your expertise on this topic.
Thank you so much for having me. I am elated about the conversation we're about to have because it's very important, not only for this election, but moving forward. I hope this conversation can spark more knowledge for people, not only for this presidential election, but for more to come as well.
State and local
elections too, not just presidential.
Because they're very important, and I don't think enough emphasis gets placed on our local elections. You know, the presidential elections, they nationally get a lot of media coverage, as they should, but our local elections play such an important role in local state taxes, school board zoning, all of the different things where budgeting goes. So this is such an important topic. But I want to give you an opportunity. Like I said, you have such an impressive resume. So can you tell us about your journey to the legal field and what motivates you? What is your why behind wanting to pursue this career?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Well, first, I started off in undergrad at Southern University. I knew before that, though, I wanted to be an attorney. So I remember being in high school and being on the debate team. And in that team, I saw myself and one of my mentors that was a teacher on there, but he was an attorney. He was mentoring and teaching us about that debate team, but he was doing personal injury at the time, but he had did civil rights prior to that. And he would always talk to us about his cases, right? About his prior cases, his current cases. And he would give us a perspective of how the legal system works, but sometimes it doesn't work for people that look like us. Right. And so that really motivated me to want to go to law school because of that mentor, of that just experience with him, because he would sow into us and mentor us. And that association with law to him, to us, really sparked my interest. So from there, I went to undergrad, of course, you know, partied and loved undergrad. But I knew that a part of my soul was attached to the law. So after that, I did it. I went to undergrad. I finished the LSAT, and I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. So Southern University Law Center accepted me. The best decision of my life, because that law school and that university taught me so much about life outside of just law. It taught me how to be an attorney, the practicing part of being an attorney. But it taught me about advocacy as well, because in that law center, you have a pro bono slash law clinic where they helped underserved, underprivileged people of the community. Scotlandville is the name of the community. They come in and they get legal services. And you see how much they need legal services, but they can't afford it, right? And how much they need just that legal touch in their life, if it's not a will and testament, if it's something dealing with bankruptcy, if it's not something deal with the apartment complex, with them having issues with their apartment complexes, divorce, child custody. We had, so in that law center, you have a law clinic freely pro bono, and you help those underserved and underprivileged. And being a part of that law center clinic, it drove me to be, this is my why, to help people that are underserved and underprivileged. And being able to do that, if you're not doing that as an attorney, you're really, what are you doing? Because you're trying to help people. That's at the end of the day, being an attorney is a customer service type of based job. You're having clients that you can come in, that you can help, and you're trying to get the best result for your client. And that really gave me my why. And since then, I've kind of teetered into mentorship because of it. I have four mentees now that are in law school, two that are about to take the LSAT. And they give me another sense of why, because what I have done now is I've expanded that territory to future attorneys and litigators that I hope that I can put that spark of pro bono, helping those less fortunate. And some of them in law school have already started doing pro bono work and law clinic work that have helped underserved, underprivileged communities wherever they are at in law school. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, it's motivated me outside of just that one mentor, and that debate team has motivated me to where I am today.
So I want to take a step back to your journey, having that mentor. Yeah. So I'm of the belief that if I change one thing, it would change everything. Do you think naturally you have this gift and passion inside of you to help others? I can feel that. Yeah. But had you not had this mentor I want to pause. Did this gentleman, was he African-American?
He was.
So do you think having this mentor that looked like you, seeing that, helped you believe what could be possible for yourself, like the exposure to him and the work that he was doing?
That's a great question. Had I not seen it, I probably wouldn't be where I am today, because seeing that in a debate prep, seeing how sharp he was, seeing how thorough he was, but seeing him come in when he announces to other teams, oh, my name is Andrew Johnson, attorney at law, mentor for this debate team, you step back and you're like, wow, I see that in someone that looks like me when all I've seen on television shows is people that don't look like me. I've seen these television shows where all of them are coming there, they're white, you know, and I've been able to experience, soak up, be a sponge to somebody that looks like me that actually came in and invested in me. So if to answer your question, I don't know if I would be here today if I hadn't seen that, because that representation, it really does matter. To see that you can be something because you see somebody else that's a mentor to you actually doing it, it matters. So seeing that and having him in my space and having him as a mentor, I still talk to him to this day sometimes. We communicate on Facebook, communicate via text, and just seeing that helped me a lot and gave me that belief, even when times were hard in undergrad and law school, like, hey, mm-hmm. And he would give me motivation too, like, hey, I've seen you since you were on the debate team. I know what you can do. I know what you're capable of. Keep going. He listed me to my first internship when I was in law school. Because of his network, he helped me network myself into my first job, right? And so it's a full circle moment. It really is.
I love that. And I didn't want to skate past that, because I do believe that representation and exposure really makes a difference, especially with our kids, because like you said, for so long, if you don't have exposure to that within your family or your immediate community, looking at the media, I mean, we just really started to see more exposure and more diversity when it comes to entertainment.
Yes.
I would say like the last decade, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
That's not that long. So, you know, I wanted to touch on that. And then I also want to give you your flowers, because clearly you're passing that on by being a mentor to the next generation. So, you know, you never know. They could be in an interview saying, you know, Mr. Gary, help me, you know, because I saw him, I knew it was possible. So, I just wanted to touch on that. That's amazing.
And that's how you pay it forward, right? You pay it forward by helping someone else. And you're hopeful that who you're paying it forward to can pay it forward as well. And it's a cycle. You know, I think for so long as a marginalized community, we had this crab in a bucket mentality sometimes that I have to be better than you, and I can't get you and lace you up with anything that I have going on because you're going to overtake me one day. I don't think that's not how it should go.
I agree. And I think that mindset has been ingrained in us, to be transparent, but I think it's up to us to break the cycle and then to take it a step further. For me as a believer, I trust and understand that what's for me is for me. So I can see, you know, you doing well and soaring in your legal career and sit back and admire it and say, dang, you know, I aspire to be at that level one day. But I have to take a step back and understand that it's not going to look the same on me, because what's for you is for you and your journey is your journey. So I can admire that, but I should never try to trip you up or do anything to prevent you from getting to that point, because I'm not doing anything but hurting myself.
Exactly.
You know, because what man meant for evil, God meant for good. Gary, don't get me started. We about to...
Come on. And that's rooted. And that's and it's crazy, because I was talking to a friend not long ago. Mm-hmm. All of our trials and tribulations were rooted in that belief. It's a spiritual belief, right? And it goes back to even slavery. Like our ancestors and all of those that came before us in the Black community during slavery was rooted in what's for me is for me. They had to do a lot little faith, but did so much and has transcended us to where we can sit up here and say we're on a podcast talking about voting. We're able to have voting rights and go to a poll and be able to hit a poll to vote for possibly a woman that is Jamaican and Indian and has been a part of so many different life-changing decisions in our lifetime. We were able to vote for the first Black man to ever sit in the White House. Like, it's so many things that we have been able to do because of those sacrifices for people that came before us. And we think about it, 1960s 1950s and 40s. That wasn't that long ago.
My parents were born in the 1960s. My mom in 61, my dad in 63.
Wasn't that long ago.
No.
And so, you know, we're still fighting. Now just systematically rather than putting your hands on me, you know.
That part.
Yeah.
That part, 100%. And with policies, which is the next thing we're going to get into.
Yes.
So I want to start out by asking you, so obviously we're here to discuss voting registration and voter suppression. So in order for us to understand this topic in its entirety and have an effective conversation, I think it's important for us to explore the history of voter suppression. And so I wanted to start back by discussing some information that I found on a website called Britannica. I just wanted to source that. So intimidation and violence against African Americans dates back to the early 1870s. So Northern support for federal intervention in the
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Southern states to ensure racial equality began to wane in a series of U.S. Supreme Court rulings, which continued 20 years later into the 1890s. So this actually greatly limited the scope of the Reconstruction era constitutional amendments and civil rights laws. So all of these factors combined to enable white Democrats to retake control of all three Southern states by 1876. By 1877, disputed returns from the 1876 presidential election in those states figured a secret deal by which Democrats supported the claim of the Republican presidential candidate Rutherford Hayes to their state's electoral votes, giving Hayes a one-vote victory in the Electoral College over Samuel J. Tilden in exchange for a pledge by Hayes to withdraw all remaining federal troops from the South, thus effectively ending Reconstruction. During the subsequent three decades, Democratic-controlled Southern states passed laws and adopted state constitutional amendments that effectively disenfranchised almost all African-American voters in the state, in the South, excuse me, and imposed a rigid system of racial segregation there, which would be later known as Jim Crow. And this would last going into the mid-20th century. So to continue this, some early tactics and examples of voter suppression aimed at African-Americans specifically were poll taxes, literacy or comprehension tests. These tests, just to emphasize this, were not applied to white voters. Quote-unquote good character tests, grandfather clauses, which in their original form restricted voting rights to the male descendants of persons who were eligible to vote prior to 1866 or 1867, whites-only primary elections, and outright fraud committed by white election officials. Poll taxes were eventually made unconstitutional in federal elections by the 24th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in 1964, and in state and local elections by the Supreme Court in 1966. The practice of applying literacy tests to all Black voters, and only to them, was banned by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and literacy tests in general were suspended for certain jurisdictions under the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So, having discussed that history, I want to jump in by talking about voter suppression. And actually, let's take a step back first. So let's talk about registration in the U.S. Can you tell me who in 2024 is excluded from being able to register to vote?
Okay, so that it varies, right? Okay. State by state. Most of the time, some states have outlawed certain things, but felons mm-hmm. in some states cannot vote.
Okay.
Some states have their state legislatures have made laws where they allow felons to vote after a certain amount of time. They allow felons to vote after certain criteria are met, such and such. Most of the time, felons. Non-citizens, people not born in the United States and not of United States parents,
okay,
cannot vote. In presidential elections, people in U.S. territories, Puerto Rico, Guam, cannot vote for presidential elections. Most people don't know that. But
I did not know that.
Yeah, so most times people don't know that. But territories cannot vote. And if you miss, the deadline to register, you can't vote. But sometimes you can vote as well if your voting registration is inactive. Now, the last two, the inactiveness and the voter registration itself, vary state to state as well. Because what we have seen is a lot of purging going on of people's voter registration IDs and voter registration activity. Okay. That's a state by state also, state by state legislature thing. We see in most Republican states, they're making laws where they are purging certain voter registration persons if the mailing address isn't the same, or if they haven't voted in a certain amount of time, or if the signature on the voter registration card doesn't match the ID. Now, these few kind of changes are being challenged in the court. I will make that statement. But most of the time, in Republican-led states, they know that voter registration, since 2020, really, has gone up. So they're trying to make it harder for you to register to vote. But non-citizens can't vote, people that have felonies in certain states, and citizens that are in territories like Puerto Rico and Guam can't vote for presidential elections.
So two things. So one, I'm encouraged hearing one of the things that you said, that voter registration has increased since 2020.
Sure.
Because to be very honest, some of the conversations that I had been hearing via just in passing in social media, and then I can think of a few people in particular personally that I encountered that had the mindset of, well, I'm just not voting. So very voter apathetic, I know. And even with just everything that I just laid out, the sacrifices that were made for us to be able to have the right to vote, trust me, you're preaching to the choir. I plan to vote early. Okay.
Right.
So, right. And I want my sticker. I do it in person because I want my sticker. I'm not mailing it in.
Same.
I'm in Georgia.
Same.
I don't trust y'all.
Yeah.
No. So yeah. So that's encouraging for me to hear that voter registration has increased. So now the other part of that is making sure people actually get to the polls and they're not deterred once they arrive to the poll. So the other thing I wanted to ask you is, when you talked about inactivity in terms of voting. So let's just say I'm someone, this is not me, I vote in local elections. Y'all don't come for me. But if I were someone who had not voted since, say, the last presidential election, or even since the last presidential election of like 2016, is that what's considered voter inactivity?
It varies. So it could be. Some people, once you change your address with DMV, some states are going in and seeing if they have, because what you can do is you can always update your voter registration portal on the state website.
Okay.
What they have began to do is some states have gone in and say, oh, they've updated their DMV, but they haven't updated their voter registration address. Let's purge them because it's technically inactive. And so And they're doing this without sending a notice to the persons to get them to cure whatever the inactivity is. They're just purging people. Okay. Recently in Florida, I think it was over 60,000 people have been purged. Recently, even in Georgia, I think they started purging people up to 100,000, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. In North Carolina, they started purging people. What I have noticed more and more, because of the court system being more apathetic to voter registration and voting rights groups, and they're winning these court battles against these different states, now they're trying to do it on a technicality. Oh, you haven't voted, or oh, your voter registration is outdated. Let's kick you out. But you're not giving people enough notice or notice at all for them to cure whatever the issue is with the voter registration. I know for sure I have heard of three different cases where people have gone because the early voting has started for the election. Right. In some states, people have gone to register to vote and haven't even been on the ballot. I haven't even been on the voting roster. But the cure to that, always make sure if you know that you have no issues, you don't know why you're not on there, at the voting location, get a provisional ballot. That provisional ballot gets you the ability to vote. And if they find out that it is cured, that vote that you have on that provisional ballot is counted. Do not let anyone tell you, oh, you can't vote. They need to check the roster. The voting whoever needs to check the roster. They need to check the state website in front of you. They need to make sure to check it again. And if you can't get your name on the ballot on the register in the state website, say, hey, I understand. I know that this might be an issue. I don't know why it is, but can I get a provisional ballot to vote? And after everything's cured, it will be counted. And then they should be able to tell you, yes, you can. This is the steps you need to take. This is what you need to put, information you need to put on there. No one should be turned away from voting, especially if you know that your voter registration activity should be active, and there should be no funny business going on in your state.
Okay, so you definitely just touched on a lot, and I appreciate you for educating me on all of these things. And again, that's why we're having this conversation, because I had no idea that all of these U.S. citizens were being purged in this way. Sadly, it's not surprising, but that's a large number of people.
Yeah.
Think about the significance of those numbers of people that could really tip.
Because we got an election, for sure, for sure.
So that's exactly why they're doing it. So I wanted to ask you, because you just mentioned what to do should someone face this when they go to cast their vote. And so I just want to make it clear that what you just described for the listeners, this is an example of voter suppression.
Yeah,
so do not get to the ballot, to your polling location, and be discouraged. Yeah. You need to follow these steps. And so I want to repeat those, but I also want to take a step back. So you mentioned have them pulling up their state website in front of you. Like, let's say I'm the voter. When they do that, what should I be looking for?
So when you do that, you should be looking for your name, first and last,
okay,
your date of birth.
Okay.
Some states have your driver's license number, some don't.
Okay.
And then you should be looking for the address to confirm that's you who you are. And then you should be looking for status. And it should tell you active or inactive. What I would tell you to do is you always go and you do it first. You do a check first before you, if they tell you, oh, you're not on the roster for voting. Okay, hold on. Let me check something. And if you do see that you're on the roster as active, they probably won't change it, because the voting proctors are kind of sometimes a little iffy. You can say, hey, I'm registered here, and still say, can I get a provisional ballot? I want to vote here. There's no issue. I'll check my status as I go in the later weeks, but I need to vote right now. Or if they can't find it, you can't find it, and you're inactive, and you know there's no reason for you to be inactive, still get a provisional ballot. Also, what you can do is there's a Department of Justice voter registration hotline number. Okay. That voter registration hotline number, you can submit a ticket on any issues that you have regarding this very issue. I'm not on the register, the voter's ballot or the voter docket. I don't understand why I'm not on here. And there's a little bit of irregularity going on at this voting poll place. And what they'll do is they'll launch an investigation. Now, I don't know how long the investigation is going to last, but they'll launch an investigation into, okay, what's going on? If there's too many irregularities, they'll say, okay, let's go and send some people in. Let's look at this right now before voting day. But don't just don't take their word for it or take a no. Keep pushing the envelope, especially if you know it's supposed to be active.
Okay. That makes sense. So I'm glad that you shared that. What I want to ask you is, can you repeat those steps for the listeners so they'll know ways to be proactive should they get?
Yeah. And I'm going to get that number for them. Give me 1 second. All right. So I have a few different numbers. So this is the process. If you feel like you're going to a polling place and you're having issues with the polling place, mm-hmm. first thing you do, if they don't see your name on the voter roster for the state, mm-hmm. pull your phone out and go to the state website, the Secretary of State website, mm-hmm. and check your own voter registration yourself.
Okay.
Your name, first and last, your date of birth, your address, and your activity. It should say active or inactive. If you find yourself not on that roster as active, if it's inactive, do not leave. You tell them, I do not know why I'm inactive. However, may I possess a provisional ballot that I can still cast my vote, mm-hmm. and then everything will be cured and your vote will be counted. If they're still giving you pushback, I have 3 numbers that you should call. Still ask for a provisional ballot. If they don't give you one.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal, game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Please call these numbers. Even if they do give you one, vote and call these numbers. So I have the ACLU Voter Protection Hotline. That number is 1-877-523-2792. The ACLU Voter Protection Hotline, 877-523-2792. You have the Department of Justice, DOJ. That number is 1-800-253-3931. Again, the Department of Justice, DOJ, 1-800-253-3931. And then you have a voter protection hotline, general hotline that goes to the numerous Secretary of State's hotline. That number is 1-866-687-8683. Again, the voter protection hotline, 1-866-687-8683. Use those 3 numbers. Somebody's going to answer the phone. You can answer, you can bet that, or you can leave a voicemail. But that'll give you that extra layer just to let people know that there's something real fishy going on at this mm-hmm. polling place that just doesn't seem right.
And I think if they see a voter taking action, then if there is a case of voter suppression, then that may give them a second to take a step back and say, oh, actually, I was able to find you in the roster. You know, if they see that you're willing to take action and go forward. So, again, I'm so unaware of this, so I want to be educated. In terms of voters being purged, is this legal for them to be able to do this and give voters an inactive status?
Technically, yes. Okay. The issue comes in is they're not giving people time to cure it. They're just voting. They're just purging them. Most state legislatures and state constitutions say, hey, yes, your voter registration is defective or inactive. However, you have 30 days from the date that we send you this notice of inactivity to cure or to correct this certain defective thing or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. There's been several lawsuits where people, states have been just purging. Secretary of State has just been purging people without giving people time enough to cure. There's a recent case in Pennsylvania, which is a battle state, right?
Right.
Where a voting rights group actually won the court lawsuit, giving people a defective signatures, giving them 30 days from the date that the signature is located to be defective to cure it. 30 days, and it's up to 30 days after the election, but you have to give them notice. Because if you don't give them notice, how are they going to know to cure it? So that some people in the state wanted to just exit people and purge people. Well, the voting rights groups came in representing some of the people in the state and won a federal lawsuit saying, hey, you have to give them 30 days to correct or cure any type of voter registration error or defect that they have to make sure that their votes can be counted.
Okay, so we have that education. And I just want to educate everyone on something else. So the definition, again, according to Britannica.com, of voter suppression is any legal or extra legal measure or strategy whose purpose or practical effect is to reduce voting or registering to vote by members of a targeted racial group, political party, or religious community. So I know we've definitely taken a dive into that. So I want to talk about some of the bills that have been passed in terms of voter suppression, trying to discourage people from voting. So as recent as May 2024, there have been some bills passed in the state of Georgia to restrict voting access.
Yeah.
And so not just in Georgia. So at least 11 states have enacted 13 restrictive laws. Two more restrictive bills in two states were passed by both chambers of the legislature and are awaiting the governor's approval of their state. Legislation is characterized as restrictive if it contains one or more provisions that would make it harder for eligible Americans to register, stay on the voter rolls, or cast a ballot as compared to existing law. So some of those states include Texas, Pennsylvania, Georgia, which you just named. And so to give a deeper dive into some of the bills for Georgia, now Senate Bill 189 was passed just a few months ago in May of this year. And this is actually the most impactful and controversial of the three laws that were put into place. So what this law does is that this allows anyone to formally challenge as many voters' eligibility in their county as they wish. This also makes it easier to invalidate a voter's eligibility by not placing any limits on factors that can be used to make a valid claim. Like if someone is registered to vote or has a homestead exemption in another jurisdiction, it also allows voters to be removed from the rolls up to 45 days before an election, which we talked about. And this is actually a violation of the National Voter Registration Act, which bans removals of voters within 90 days of a federal election. But the new law also eliminates the practice of using QR codes on ballots to count votes electronically. Another provision within Senate Bill 189 that could have a major implication in this upcoming election is it allows a presidential candidate from any political party to be on the ballot as long as they've qualified for the ballot in at least 20 other states. Now, this could potentially be a huge boost for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who dropped out of the Democratic primary to run as an independent candidate, potentially siphoning votes away from either potential President Harris or former President Trump. So with these laws, what I wanted to ask you is, first and foremost, I would, based on our conversation, and you're educating us, so correct me. So I would say, our listeners taking the action of educating themselves on these laws and knowing what's out there, making sure that they are registered to vote, checking their registration status. What are some other things that we can do to protect ourselves considering these laws? Hey, Style Crew. I want to talk to you about the sponsor of the first season of the Style and Conversation podcast, which is Bite Authority. I am holding their multi-collagen protein, which is the very first product that introduced me to their brand as a whole. So I came across their multi-collagen protein after doing about a month of research to find the right collagen for me and my lifestyle. And I was looking for a collagen from a reputable company that had customer service that was available, that provided the daily recommended dosage of collagen, didn't include any sugar. They had a variety of flavors that appealed to me, or non-flavor in case I wanted to include it in my coffee or a smoothie one morning. And that's how I came across Bite Authority. I gave it a shot 1 month, and after that I was hooked. I became a recurring customer. And now 2 years later, they are a sponsor of our first season. So because of that, we have a special code for the listeners of Style and Conversation, which is Styled by Jess. That code is spelled STYLEDBYJESS. And that will get you 15% off their entire collection of products. In addition to their collagen, they have a variety of products for your lifestyle, whatever your needs may be. They have several supplements and tablets. So one of the tablets that I consume a couple of times per week is the Melt PM. And this actually aids in sleep support, appetite control, metabolism boost, and helps reduce cravings to help with all of the things that aid with maintaining a healthy weight for us ladies. And so this is another product of theirs that I really love. And they have, like I said, a variety of products for whatever you're looking for. So just to tell you a little bit more about Bite Authority, at Bite Authority, we believe everyone should be able to take their health into their own hands, and we envision a future where health and nutrition products are found on counters in every single household. We pride ourselves on being an absolute authority when it comes to health and wellness supplements and set the standard on providing high-quality, science-based, clean, tested, and proven products for every person from every walk of life. Bite Authority can now be found at GNC retail stores, as well as other retailers nationwide, and has gone international in Canada, the Dominican Republic, Panama, the Caribbean, and Africa. For more information about Bite Authority and our commitment to promoting women's health, wellness, and active lifestyles, please visit www.biteauthority.com. And that is spelled VITAUTHORITY. All right. Make sure you use the code Styled by Jess, and then let's jump back into this episode.
One of the main things I think is it's hard because we have lives, right? We're busy. But knowing what bills are coming through the legislature regarding voting. There was a bill in Georgia not long ago. I think it's Senate Bill 202. Uh-huh. It was a ban on food and water. It was a ban on food
where
and water.
Where people can't, if you're in line for a lengthy amount of time,
you can't get food and water. Come on.
I remember that was an issue During the first, when President Obama ran for the first time. I remember because I wasn't a resident here at the time, but I have family members that have been here for years. And they said they dealt with that, like extremely ridiculously long lines. And then, you know, they weren't allowed to get food or water.
As a, it's a, and it's a form of voter voter suppression, right? Yeah. Because you have notoriously long lines on a day of voting, right? It's a presidential election. They're notoriously long. But what you're telling people is water and food can't be given to these people because they choose to stand in these lines and vote. It's outlandish. What it is, it's a voter suppression tool, mechanical tool to cut people from, oh, they can't stay in line all this long, and that, and they're going to leave and they're not going to vote. What people have to do is be educated on voting. It's hard. I know we have lives. Like I said, when there's a bill that's coming up and there's a new voting bill or any type of bill that deals with voting rights, look it up. Look up what it does, because you can't have ignorance does not mean that the bill is not going to go into place. You got to make your voices heard. So if it's a bill that's coming up, I would say call your local leaders, make your voice heard, get people to call. If you can, get people to rally, go up there against the bill, because rallying and calling help. Write letters. Those letters need to be addressed to everybody that's in the committees that have put this bill out. Write letters. But also understand that there are different voting groups that are keeping an eye on all these bills, right? Make sure that you understand the legal premise that's being happening with these bills. So if the ACLU is attacking these bills because they said the bills are unethical, okay, keep up on the case. Make sure you're showing up to the hearings at the case. Make sure you're letting your voice heard. Most of the time when these bills are being enacted, they have a window where you can file an opposition as a resident. Hey, I don't like this bill is because of this, or this bill is going to unjustly discriminate the Black community because of this. They have a window where you can get public input and you can go up to the legislature on these days and have public input on these bills and how it affects certain amount of people, certain racial groups, certain gender groups. So make sure, and I know it's hard for us to get off of work. I know it's hard for us to do certain things, but make sure your voice is heard at the local level on these bills. As soon as you hear a bill, as soon as you hear they're allowing the public to come in and make their voices heard on these bills before the bill is actually going to take effect, go up there, make your voice heard, write letters, call your local legislature, call your local congressman, call your local school board member, call everybody to voice your dislike and displeasure. Because if you're not voicing it and you feel like, oh, well, my voice doesn't matter, they're not going to listen to me. Well, they're not going to listen to you if your mouth is quiet. They're not going to listen to you if you're not putting your opinion out. They're not going to listen to you if you're not showing up to hearings and rallying. And
this podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
I'll tell you something. People don't think that these rallies and demonstrations work. I think that we've seen good and bad how we've seen the conflict in the Middle East. There's been a lot of rallies. There's been a lot of demonstrations. And there's been a lot of moving of policies because people's voices are being heard. Now, is in a good way or bad way, that can be debated. But regardless, policies are changing because people are in the streets marching for what they believe in. So if you are going to be opposing these certain bills, get connected with ACLU, get connected with the NAACP. They have rallies, they have community calls, they have all these things all the time against these certain bills. Get connected with these church groups. Everything starts in the church. I just want people to know that. Like, yeah. I advocacy and the voting groups all started in the church. These were church members, preachers, reverends, pastors that got together and say, hey, this enough is enough. We need to make our voices heard. So get connected and make sure like you're a community leader, because community is important. But don't just sit on the sideline, because if you sit on the sideline for so long, the oppressor starts to think that the oppression is supposed to be right. And that's not how it's supposed to go.
Come on, Gary. Come on.
You know?
Come on. So I want to run it back because you're educating us. And I want to make sure that the listeners are equipped with what they need to do. So you mentioned looking up these bills, being aware of when they're going to be presented, going on the floor for vote.
Correct.
Where should listeners be looking for that information?
Most of the time, your state, you can go to the state legislature website.
Okay.
And you can go to bills that are coming up on the floor for either conversation, bills that are being marked up before they come on the floor for conversation, or bills that are about to be voted on.
Okay.
So in that state legislature website, you can see what bills are about to come up. And on that website, they give you a synopsis about what it does. And most of the time, you can go to Google or you can go to Twitter. Sometimes Twitter be a little shaky, but you can get, okay, you can log in. It does be a little X, I'm sorry,
not,
X or whatever.
Not Twitter be Twittering, yeah.
it be a little shaky sometimes, yeah. You gotta watch out. But you can go on these websites and you can actually see what the bill does. Because most of the time, if it's a controversial bill, they have something on it. Like Essence Magazine will have something on it. Like I said, the ACLU, NAACP, GRIO will have something. Somebody will have something on it where they have some type of negative output for either a marginalized, or underprivileged, or underserved community. They'll have something on it. But if not, see what the bill does. And it's not as, I'm not going to say it's easy, because you're going to have to actually check and you're going to have to see, okay, what does this bill really do? Because sometimes it could be a lot of gravy, but it don't get to the meat and potatoes until you really got to get the understanding of what the bill is. Is it negative in its effect, or is it negative on its face? On its face, you can see it's racially negative. But if you don't see it racially negative or I'm not going to say racially, because sometimes it's not racial. I'm not trying to make it a racial thing.
Right. No, I'm following you. We're trying.
Sometimes it's just discriminatory outright. And if it doesn't say it on its face, sometimes in its effects, it does it. So try and go on the website, see what bills are coming up. Make sure that those bills are still going to be voted on. They have to have a period where they are letting the public speak on it. On the website where the bills are, they'll have a chronological order of what the bill is going to go through. First, the bill is going to be marked up in committee. Second, the bill is going to be introduced on the floor. Third, the bill is going to be introduced for public input. Fourth, the bill is going to be voted on. Five, the bill is going to be signed by the governor. It's going to be important that you follow those chronological order. So whenever whenever it has its day where the public needs to come in and voice their opposition, you need to be the first one in a chair. I'm voicing my opposition because it's affecting our community or our people more than it needs to be.
Okay. And so let me ask you this. Let's say I'm a citizen that wants to oppose a bill. What are my legal rights and what do I need to have in place in order for me to be able to speak in front of lawmakers and on the floor?
That now every state is different. I will say that most of the time you have to be a citizen of the state.
Okay.
Most of the time you have to be, you have had to be there early, because most of the time they send like a little green card around for people to talk. Be there early, as early as you possibly can. And most of the time, you have to either live within the district of that whoever is introducing the bill. Some states, you have to live within that district. Some states, you don't. You can just be a citizen of the state and be there early, and they'll take your green card, and you can talk. So it really depends on the state. So I would tell you on that website, what the bill is, go look up public input or public conversation about the bill and see what the requirements are. I know most of the time you have to be a citizen of that state, and then you can go from there after that.
All right. That's helpful to know.
Yeah.
I feel like we're giving the listeners more
Something they talk, yeah.
action-based steps.
Yeah.
So something else that I wanted to talk about with you, so other branches and functions of the government that are heavily impacted through voting. So what else do the listeners, is there any other information that the listeners should have that we maybe haven't touched on just yet in our conversation?
About voting.
Yes, in terms of the different branches of government and how things, you know what, actually, I do have a better question for this because we talked about this in our pre-recording call. So recently we've seen a lot of shake up and negative fallout with certain decisions that have been made by the Supreme Court justices. We currently are imbalanced in terms of the level of thought, how you would describe them as more conservative versus moderate. There's an imbalance. Due to that, we have had the overturning of Roe versus Wade. We've also had a recent situation that went all the way to the US Supreme Court. A case for a gentleman named Marcellus Williams. God bless his soul. He was a gentleman, for anyone who's not familiar with this story, he was facing death row in the state of Missouri for a crime that he did not commit. More evidence came out recently, right up until his death, showing that he was innocent and he was still put to death. So my question to you is, when it comes to the intersectionality of the branches of government, is there any type of impact that us voting can have on these other branches of government, such as the Supreme Court on a federal level, then things of that
Yeah,
nature?
great question. Every president from, or every potential president from now and probably the next 12 years, 16 years, is going to have a chance to dictate how our the next generations are going to be functioning. And I say that because the Supreme Court justices are very old. No offense. They're very old. And so some of them are going to be retiring. Unfortunately, we saw the last president had the opportunity to install three very young justices onto the Supreme Court that are going to be there for generations to come. I want them to understand that.
And I want to pause and just to verify, to specify on which president we're speaking about. We're speaking about former President Trump.
Correct. Former
Yes.
President Trump. He was he, former President Trump was able to put three very conservative, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Barrett, and Justice Gorsuch, onto the Supreme Court. Those three seats, one stolen from President Obama. I just want to say that. I want to make sure we know that, note that. Mitch McConnell did not want to bring forth when there was a vacancy on the Supreme Court during President Obama's last year. He did not want to bring forth the nomination where he not President Obama nominated Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court seat. He did not want to bring that nomination for a vote or for a hearing, so he did not. Mitch McConnell said, we're going to allow that seat to remain vacant until the 2016 election is finalized. We're going to let the vote of the people allow us to make that seat. Well, President Trump won. Former, I'm sorry, former President Trump won. and he got a free seat. And then, of course, we know he got two seats after that. What that has done is placed ideologic imbalance onto the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it has done now is it has forced conservative views to control the rule of law for the land. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is they have not respected court precedent. Precedent mm-hmm. is important because no matter your political party, no matter how you thought of what the law should be, precedent has been respected for the Supreme Court for years.
Mm-hmm.
So when a challenge, when Dobbs came up, mm-hmm. was to overturn Roe v. Wade, many thought that precedent would never be overturned because in most of the three that were installed, most of their nominations, they said, well, we respect precedent. We respect precedent. Mm-hmm. We're not going to overturn precedent. Well, in a 6-3 decision, they overturned Roe v. Wade,
mm-hmm.
which left abortion rights to the states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, the same thing that was left to the states as well was slavery. Mind you, mm-hmm. until the Civil Rights Act, until, you know, all these different acts federally came, states were controlling slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone says, I want everyone to know and listen, when someone says, let's bring things back to the states, when we talk about the effects and on its face, it seems cool. Oh, okay, bring it back to the states. But in its effects, it's very much so a racist statement, because when the states control it, the states have the ability to do something different for every state. When federal controls it, it is one giant
umbrella.
Way. You can't deviate from that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep it. So what they have done now is it's brought abortion back to the states. We know, we've seen in the news how that is playing out. It's been horrific. We've seen how justices that are now on the Supreme Court has, let's talk about the execution that happened and the murder that happened in Missouri.
Exactly.
It's murder because you have the ability, you have the state prosecutor who is saying, let's throw this out. We have new evidence. We don't want to execute him. He has a plausible reason for a new trial. The gun that they say he shot is now no longer in existence. They destroyed the gun. But now you have evidence, DNA evidence, that shows that he is not the person that committed the crime that you're trying to execute him for. What people don't understand is when the governor said he would not come in and he would not make a pardon for him and he would not give him any stay, it goes to the Supreme Court. A Supreme Court justice, then after you make an emergency order to prolong and to disrupt the execution, a Supreme Court justice sits there and reads, should this person be executed or should they not?
Mm-hmm.
One of the three justices that was elected by former President Trump was tasked with reading that execution and could have stopped it, but chose not to. It was a choice. Elections matter. Because had the election went a different way, he would have still been here, because rightful Supreme Court justices would have saw that case. The case was tainted from the time that new evidence came. He should never be dead today. He should be alive. Elections have consequences outside of just who the president is. These people are making...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving.
Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
The Supreme Court is so powerful that they can rule that interracial marriage is no longer It's no longer a thing of the United States and is outlawed. And that means some people can't love who they want to love. They're now trying to, number one, overturn the ACA, Obamacare, which would now bring us back to private insurance, which for Black and Brown people was horrible for us. They're trying to overturn same-sex marriage, which for some people, that's all they know.
Yeah.
They're now trying to overturn a variety of different... The Supreme Court has made homelessness a crime. You can't be homeless in a city. You have to... In California, California brought a lawsuit that the Supreme Court has recently said, you can't be homeless because you have... homelessness is deterring people from coming to our state. And they've made homelessness a crime. Elections have consequences. I want people to understand that. And when we say that it's not just an election, but it has more to do with, it has so much more to do than just the election itself. That's what I mean. That's what we talk about. And we have to be very mindful about that because justices are old and this election is so consequential and it's so important.
I'm glad you went into that. And It's very heavy just hearing the weight of the effects and things that could have been different and in all honesty should be different, but we're here. So I want to ask you, because I actually was having this conversation with a friend prior to our recording. And one of the questions that they asked me was in terms of cases like Roe v. Wade being overturned, depending upon who wins in November, would the president then have any type of impact on potentially reversing that decision or how that goes going forward?
And so what you can do as a president is you can sign, the president can't really do much about that because it's a ruling. But what they can, what the president can do is call for Congress to do something. And that is making it a federal law, ingraining it as law so that the president can sign it and it's codified. What that means is it is coded in the law as an abortion is legalized federally. That means a state, a Supreme Court cannot overturn what's codified and what has been voted on by the Congress. You know why? Because Congress represents the people. The people send people to Congress to vote on bills. And once Congress codifies that law, it's law of the land. So what one campaign now has said is they will never make abortion a federal thing or leave it at the states. What another has said is, if you get a bill to me that codifies it, I'll sign it and make it land a law of the land. So they're pushing. You can do little things with executive order, but it's something as big as abortion. Congress has to make the bills. So the Senate and the House have to make that bill, vote on it, pass it, and the president has to sign it in order for federal abortions to be legal again.
Okay, but there is hope.
There is hope. There is hope.
Yes.
There is definitely
depending on hope. Which way you vote.
That's hope.
And we'll leave it at there is hope depending on which way you vote.
Correct.
With that, I want to ask you one more question. In terms of Project 2025, we've heard a lot of buzz around this. It's been touched on slightly within debates, various sponsored commercials. What can you tell us about Project 2025 in terms of its effects on?
Wow. It is dangerous. Mm-hmm. One thing it wants to do is overturn completely the Voting Rights Act. Another thing that it wants to do, which affects marginalized,
yep,
underprivileged communities.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing it wants to do, it wants to get rid of the Department of Education, which again affects marginalized, underprivileged communities. Another thing it wants to do, it wants to get rid of the ACA, Affordable Care Act, which again affects marginalized, underprivileged communities. The grand scheme of Project 2025, it's a radical conservative playbook that looks to gut every progressive policy in the last 50 years. And what it does is it gives control to a certain group of people to dictate your health care, a woman's body, the ability to vote, your education. It's so scary, and it has so many different effects. And if anybody on this podcast, I challenge you, look up Project 2025 and its effects. I just named a few. They're so deep. It deals with housing. It deals with education. It deals with marriage. It deals with a woman's body. It deals with voting, but it deals with affirmative action. It deals with so many different layers. And it's scary. And it should scare people. And it's not fear-mongering because it is an actual document that people have posted that support. So I want people to understand, it's not a document that's just false, that's just going around floating on social media. This is an actual document that the Heritage Foundation, a very conservative think tank, drafted to support a candidate for president of the United States that used to be a president of the United States that wants to control his campaign and enact these very dangerous, vile policies that will affect us in our generations to come. This isn't a game, people. This is dangerous stuff. And we can think whatever we want to think about a presidential candidate, but always understand the presidential candidate, while still have power, they're controlled or they're led by people that are under them.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Always. And if the people under them are rotten, the policies that you get every day will be rotten. And that controls your generation, your children's generation, their children's generation, because you can't just turn it off. Once those policies are enacted, they're there to stay.
Because each of these policies that you just named, took the Voting Rights Act, that was put in place in the 1960s. Obamacare, that was put in place in mid-2000s.
Yeah.
You know, the Department of Education, to be honest, I'm not educated, so I don't want to quote on when that department was put in place, but it wasn't yesterday. I know that much.
No.
So each of these things that have been put in place took time, and it just is very regressive. So I want to ask you again, just to educate the listeners so we have a clear understanding. So the Heritage Foundation drafted this playbook. Okay. They drafted this playbook in support of the Republican candidate for presidency.
Correct.
I'm trying to make sure I ask my question in an effective way. So in a sense, it's basically just a playbook that clearly states the agenda by this presidential candidate.
Correct.
And what is their connection to this candidate's race?
So most of the people that are dealing with this Project 2025 playbook used to work for the Republican candidate for the Republican nominee for president.
Okay.
And the vice presidential candidate and the person that founded this playbook are best friends. It's actually the vice president, the Republican vice presidential nominee for president, wrote the foreword for the founder and the architect of Project 2025. Best friends.
Okay.
It's not a coincidence that they're linked. I never want people to think that. It's never not a coincidence.
Okay. I think you've educated us on so many things and definitely given us enough action and enough steps on what to do in terms of our registration status, how to protect ourselves. I'm going to be linking all the information that you shared with the listeners in the episode bio because this is extremely important and I want everyone to be armed with this as they go to cast their ballots. Yeah. I want to encourage everyone, if you're able to vote early.
Please.
And make sure that you have all this information, have the episode bio pulled up, have a screenshot, whatever it is that you need. I like to ask my guests one lighthearted style related question.
Okay.
Because the title of the podcast is Style and Conversation. So I want to ask you, what is one thing in your closet? It can be a suit jacket, it can be cufflinks, it can be cologne, okay. It can be your favorite watch. What is it, this one piece that you like to throw on that when you step into any setting, you're like, okay, I'm that guy. Like, I'm Gary, I'm here to set it off. I'm feeling good. Let's do this.
Yeah. I am a cologne connoisseur. So I am going to throw on, I have Tom Ford, I have YSL, I have Versace, I have Jimmy Choo, I have Chanel. Like, I am a cologne connoisseur. I am a cologne connoisseur. So if I'm going to step, like, look, I try to step in as confident as possible because you have to step in confident as possible. Anybody going to law school, please don't ever let anybody tell you not to be confident. Always be confident. But smelling good is a whole different type of confidence. You mm-hmm. smell good and you walk in there with your head up, you're ready for war to fight for your client, their best interest. So it would have to be cologne. I am a cologne connoisseur. I think that just sets the tone for the day.
I agree with you. You can never go wrong with a nice fragrance.
Not too much though, but just right.
Yeah, not too much. Yeah. But when you walk past and people are like,
smell good.
You look good, but what do you have on?
Yeah.
So the last thing, I want to close it out by thanking you so much for sharing your expertise with us. You have definitely equipped us with some just expansive knowledge. I can't thank you enough. I want to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners where they can find you, if you have any upcoming projects or appearances that we can support you with. Just give us all the things. This is your
story. Yeah. Thank you. First of all, Jessica, thank you for having me. I really, truly appreciate it. I speak normally, but it, just being able to speak on such a personal topic is important. And it's important because I'm speaking directly to Black people. We have for so long been disenfranchised. We have got to make sure that we go out and vote, no matter what. If it's early, if it's day of, if it's absentee ballot, if it's whatever, just go vote. At this point, I don't even care who you're voting for, just vote. Mm-hmm. Because so many people have fought. My Instagram is always ALWAYZ_winning. I have no upcoming events as of now, but and I have nothing to pub. I just want people to go vote. I'm so thankful for this podcast and this space, because the work you do, Jessica, you are important not only to the community, but in, just into the world as a whole, because so many times voices aren't amplified that are do good. We want drama. We want negativity. Mm-hmm. And drama and negativity sells. I'll tell you all this. I don't even know if she wants me to tell this, but I'm going to tell it. Before we started, Jessica is a person rooted in faith. She prayed with me. Let me tell you something. That's important. That is rooted. And she is, she's doing the work. And I, Jessica, I'm proud of you. Continue doing so good. I'm going to be following you from here on out. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but God is leading you. Continue to let him lead
you. No, you can say it all. We got to be loud, God. Season. We got to be loud about God. He's been good.
He's been good. And I can tell just by the pot. I'm not going to lie to you. I get asked to do a lot of mm-hmm. podcasts and I have to turn them down because you have to have a discernment feeling, right? Yes. You have to feel it. You have to like some stuff you just, even if it's good, you can't be attached to it. Yeah. But I felt good about this and I'm glad I did it. So you are rooted. Your territory is going to expand. Your podcast is going to grow. I'm going to be an active listener and I'm appreciative that you allowed me to be in this space. So thank you for that. Truly, I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Listen, I was grateful to have your expertise on to bless the listeners and you just blessed me. You know, you just gave me encouragement because, you know, as you know, someone trying to make it happen, I have a lot of times where, you know, I'm questioning. I always have confirmation I'm on the right path, but, you know, hearing that from other people, it means a lot. So I can't do it without amazing guests like yourself willing to answer the call. So I appreciate you. And with that, y'all, like my man Gary said, go out and vote. Get your sticker. Share it on social.
On the side.
Yes. The revolution will not be televised. Yes. So until the next episode, until next Thursday, we will see you all soon. And we're out, Style Crew. Hey, Style Crew, make sure you're keeping up with our podcast through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, as well as the Podcast Index. And if you'd like to view the podcast visually, check out my YouTube channel, Styled by Jessica Lauren. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at style_andconversationpodcast.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.